It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 54 degrees. We're looking for just a 30% chance of rain today, mostly cloudy skies, headed for a high of 59. Cloudy skies tonight too, with a 20% chance of rain before 1 a.m. and a low around 50. Partly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 64. Northwest winds becoming completely calm in the morning. And we're looking for sunny skies on Thursday and Friday as well. Coming up on the Midday Report, Alaska's in the middle of a serious COVID surge and most of Anchorage's hospital beds are full. That story and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. has ramped up evacuations from Kabul Airport, planning to take thousands of people a day to safety until the end of the month. And officials say they are talking to the Taliban about all of this. Here's NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
The Pentagon says the goal is to get 5,000 to 9,000 people out of Afghanistan per day until the end of the month. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says the U.S. has been talking to the Taliban about the timeline for the evacuations and the difficulties many are reporting about getting to the airport.
The Taliban have informed us that they are prepared to provide the safe passage of civilians to the airport, and we intend to hold them to that commitment.
The U.S. is evacuating American citizens and their family members, some foreign nationals, Afghans who worked with the U.S. military and aid organizations, and others now at risk. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
In their first public remarks since they swept back into power 48 hours ago, the Taliban claimed they will respect women's rights, will not seek retribution, and would ensure Afghanistan does not become a haven for terrorists. A spokesman claims today's Taliban are not the Taliban of 20 years ago. Democratic Senator Chris Coons says he's worried the Taliban's cooperation on the ground won't last long, referencing peace talks put in motion during the Trump administration.
I'm going to pay attention to what the Taliban do. What they said at the negotiating table with Secretary Pompeo and President Trump and the commitments they made in Doha, they have utterly failed to keep.
A journalist based in Kabul tells NPR life in the capital was a little calmer this morning compared to yesterday. That person, whom NPR is not identifying for security reasons, reports seeing some open clinics, small markets, and shops inside Kabul. In other news, retail sales declined in July compared to June, according to new data from the Commerce Department, but spending continues to march toward what's stacking up to be another record-setting year. Despite new waves of coronavirus cases in the United States, NPR's Alina Selyuk reports.
Retail sales fell 1.1% in July compared to a month earlier, which was more than forecasters had predicted. The dip came mainly from a decline in sales of cars, which continued to suffer from computer chip shortages. And also online spending took a dip, down more than 3%. U.S. shoppers have been spending less time at home and more time traveling out and about. In fact, sales at bars and restaurants climbed nearly 2% last month. Compared to June, shoppers also bought a bit less furniture and fewer clothes. But overall, sales nationwide are still notably higher than they were this time last year or even the year before the pandemic. Alina Selyuk, NPR News, Washington.
Before the close, the Dow was down 282 points at 35,343. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
We are awaiting today's update from the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center. As of yesterday, they had reported 23 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. Seven of those cases were close contacts of previously reported cases, and 16 were of unknown transmission pending contact tracing. 109 cases were currently classified as active locally as of yesterday. And we will post the new update as soon as we get it on our website at kmxt.org. Alaska is in the middle of a serious COVID surge, and almost 95% of Anchorage's hospital beds are full. The last time case numbers were this high, state level and Anchorage policymakers had much more serious health mandates in place to slow the spread of the virus, like testing and mask requirements. This time around, as a far more contagious variant multiplies, those mandates are missing. As Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media reports, that's leaving doctors and hospital executives wondering how much worse things might get.
Providence Alaska Medical Center, the state's largest hospital, is contending with a significant staffing shortage. Had the new surge in COVID-19, and it's making life really hard for workers.
I've been working at Providence for 22 years, and I can say that the capacity issues we're having currently are unlike anything I've ever seen.
Dr. Dan Safranik is medical director of Providence's emergency department. You might have seen some of the charts over the past couple weeks that show extremely tight space at Anchorage's hospitals, the ones that say there are few or no intensive care unit beds left. Safranik says that doesn't mean you'll get turned away. If you show up with a gunshot wound, you could still get ICU-level care in the emergency department. But if you have a broken wrist, you could be waiting a very long time.
Beds that would normally be available to new patients coming in are being taken up by patients that are already admitted. And the way that plays out on a shift is, you know, you come in expecting to maybe have 8 or 10 rooms that you could start to see patients in, and maybe there's no rooms available at all, but there's, you know, 8, 10, 15, 20 patients in the waiting room.
COVID patients only fill about 10% of Anchorage hospital beds right now, but the summer is already an especially busy time for emergency rooms. Safranik says wait times at Providence can be 4 to 5 hours, which can be pretty hard for both hospital patients and staff. Alaska has only seen one other COVID surge as big as the one it's experiencing now. At that point last winter, Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration required virus testing at Alaska airports, and Anchorage's city government mandated mask wearing in public spaces. This time around, that's not happening. Dr. Ann Zink, the state's chief medical officer, says it's clear the public's collective enthusiasm for COVID mandates has evaporated.
Sometimes I feel like social distancing and these things that we ask each other to do is kind of like holding your breath, and you can only do it for so long. People need to be together. Our kids need to be in school. These things need to happen. And it is more challenging to be able to respond to this virus. And I think that's why we're seeing it surging.
Governor Dunleavy has made clear he's uninterested in returning to the types of state mandates he instituted earlier in the pandemic. Anchorage's new mayor, Dave Bronson, also ran on an anti-mandate platform, and elected officials in other Alaska population centers like the Kenai Peninsula and Matsu are showing little interest in new pandemic policies too, which means that decisions around mask wearing and social distancing are trickling down to the individual level, Zink says.
Ultimately, it's up to Alaskans and what they choose to do. And if they choose to get vaccinated, if they choose to wear a mask, if they choose to distance and keep their group small, and trying to do that in a way that protects their overall mental and physical health as well.
With the extra contagious Delta variant that's sweeping Alaska now, some places like India have actually seen very quick peaks and drop-offs in case rates. And the vaccine is helping blunt the most serious impacts of infections. But according to longtime Alaska epidemiologist Dr. Tom Hennessy, there's still a significant risk that case rates could stay high here or even keep increasing, particularly given the inconsistent plans for masking and other mitigation measures in schools around the state.
We're moving into a time of year when people are going to be indoors more and schools are starting. So those congregations of people indoors are going to favor transmission.
Hennessy acknowledges that Delta poses a tougher problem for public health officials to manage, but he says he's frustrated by the way that Alaskans and Alaska politicians aren't making full use of effective measures to fight it, whether those are vaccines or mask mandates.
What happens is we end up with a surge in cases that results in deaths and hospitalization and pain and suffering and fear for people that was avoidable. We just didn't respond with the tools that we know work.
The gap in government action could be filled by individuals and businesses taking responsibility for public safety, Hennessy says. Anchorage's school district and the state university system are requiring masking indoors, and some healthcare organizations are starting to require mandatory workforce vaccinations, but almost all of Alaska's largest businesses have yet to do so. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
The Pleasant Valley Community Association hosted a meeting over the weekend to update area residents on a string of recent arson attacks in the Two Rivers area along the Chena Hot Springs Road east of Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the attacks were spread out over the last 3 months, and they continue to keep area residents on edge. But locals are also taking proactive action to protect themselves and to aid those targeted by the fires.
A few dozen people showed up for Saturday's meeting at the Pleasant Valley Baptist Church to share information about the arson attacks, which have burned or damaged numerous homes and community buildings in the rural area. Pleasant Valley Community Association board member and local pastor Bob Sugden talked about a recent failed attack.
For those of you who may not know, July 26th was the last time that there was an attempted arson. It actually took place on Milan Drive, which literally is right next door to my church at 14 and a half Chena Hot Springs Road. The owner came over to my church that morning and was very distressed, and we got the police involved, and they came out and did an investigation with the fire marshal and determined that indeed it was an attempted arson, but it failed, and their house thankfully wasn't harmed in any way.
State troopers previously confirmed that they are officially investigating 7 area structure fires which have occurred since mid-May as arson, including blazes that destroyed a local Grange Hall and a Pleasant Valley Community Association building and damaged an association-owned community center. Association Chairman Wayne Shea said investigators have reported progress.
The FBI did tell me this week, he says, I believe we have the information we need right now to eventually solve this case. He said, we just have to put the pieces together. He said, it's like a puzzle laying on the table. We have to put all these pieces together. There's nobody perfect, and they haven't committed the perfect crime.
Shea says investigators are analyzing evidence, including letters written to some arson victims, and that a forensic laboratory in Virginia is working to recover images from fire-damaged community center security cameras.
They told us, you'll not hear anything about the camera until it shows up as evidence in the court. So, in other words, they're saying, you can keep asking, but we're not going to tell you. And I understand that.
Meanwhile, Shea says work continues to make repairs to the community center and thank the many people who are volunteering their time to help. Locals have also stepped up to aid those who've lost homes.
With the help of a lot of friends, neighbors, and family, we got the roof on our new house. It is completely shingled and waterproof.
Arson victim Virginia McKee says they expect to have the new house ready in time for winter.
I just simply cannot say thank you enough to Two Rivers community and the help and the generosities that they have given us and shown us.
On other fronts, a community watch program continues to keep a close eye out for suspicious activity, and a local group is working to establish a volunteer fire department.
We have a water truck, pump truck, and engine truck, slash engine, and an ambulance, and then we'll have a rescue truck. So that is being donated. That's being donated from the NANA.
Organizer Mark Reimenschneider said the equipment will be transferred as soon as the group registers with the state. He emphasized that it's a nonprofit, non-government organization.
We will do our own fundraising, our own, you know, state grants and everything like that. So the reason to go nonprofit is to not put a burden on taxes on the community, but help also lower your insurance rates down too.
Reimenschneider said the volunteer fire department service area will extend from mile 10 to mile 42 Chena Hot Springs Road and encouraged anyone interested to volunteer, noting that other regional fire departments have offered to help with training. In Pleasant Valley, I'm Dan Bross.
Ketchikan has a new dock in town. Well, outside of town. The first cruise ships to tie up at the two-berth mill at Ward Cove arrived this month. As KRBD's Molly Lubers reports, the arrival marks a milestone for the project to revitalize the former pulp mill site.
When the first cruise ship to visit Ward Cove docked on August 4th, passengers were greeted by rain and by the Tongass National Forest. Those trees were the first thing that Emma Murray says she noticed as she stepped off the ship.
It was just really exciting to see for me because I'm from a desert and nothing's green at all. And it was just so green and wet. I was just like, wow.
Murray and other passengers took refuge from the rain in an old Ketchikan pulp mill building. Before it shut down in 1997, the mill was the largest employer on the island and the center of Ketchikan's timber industry. Now, developers hope it'll serve as a hub for the community's tourism economy. Ward Cove Dock Group's John Binkley says it feels like a full circle moment.
It's fired back up again, and I think it's something that I hope all of the community can take pride in, that the mill is back.
Binkley says that's especially exciting after COVID-19 delayed the dock's opening. Norwegian Cruise Line, which invested in the dock project in exchange for priority use of its berths, brought non-paying passengers on a simulated voyage for its first trip to Ward Cove. Then, on August 12th, the first round of paying passengers stepped off the Norwegian Encore. Once visitors pass through the center, they exit into a parking lot. There, they get into buses and trolleys that take them all around Ketchikan.
Alright guys, you guys can pull over to Scrappy's. If you guys want to follow me, I'll get you on the bus today.
Ward Cove is located in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, but outside city limits, about 7 miles north of downtown. A financial impact report about the dock last year found that the city of Ketchikan could lose about $4.3 million in port fees and sales taxes annually. Binkley says the economic activity will still be on the island, but may just switch locations. But beyond the passengers on top of the boats, there's also a story below the ships. As the first megaships begin to dock at Ward Cove, ongoing environmental concerns have been renewed. The pulp mill had discharged pollutants into the cove, and the dock now rests on a Superfund site. That designation allows the Environmental Protection Agency to clean up contaminants and manage the area in the long term. The EPA completed its cleanup of the site in 2001, removing some sunken logs and the contaminated soil, as well as placing a 27-acre sand cap over some remaining contaminated wood material on the seafloor. But federal scientists say they're worried that the construction of the dock and the megaship's docking may stir up that sand cap. The EPA's remedial project manager for Ward Cove, Mady Novak, says it's important to not disturb that remedy.
The wood waste, as it breaks down, it can release material that is toxic to the environment.
She says the impact of the dock's construction and operation is uncertain right now, but the EPA requires ongoing monitoring. She says they expect to have a more clear picture within the next year. Binkley says he's confident the cap will be protected and that they designed the floating dock to avoid any damage. As developers continue to monitor the megaship operation with EPA oversight, Binkley says the inside of the mill is a work in progress. He gave a sneak peek into one part of the final vision, a recreation of the Tongass National Forest inside.
So as you walk in, all you'll see are the trees.
But that will come later. For now, they're just getting ready for the next round of ships. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Molly Lubers.
A standoff shut down the Alaska Highway in Tok for several hours yesterday. State troopers report being notified about a disturbance involving a man with a gun at a Chevron gas station in Tok around 6 a.m. They say 53-year-old Tok resident Norman Egolf refused to surrender to troopers, and the Interior Special Emergency Reaction Team, or SERT, was deployed at around 9 a.m. They say negotiators were able to convince Egolf to surrender, and he was arrested without incident before 11 a.m. Egolf was charged with terroristic threatening and jailed in Fairbanks. Three people were killed in an accident on the park's highway Sunday. Alaska State Troopers report being notified shortly before 3 p.m. about a head-on collision at mile 87 near Willow. They say a compact car was attempting to pass in a no-passing zone and hit a pickup truck. Both vehicles burned. The deceased occupants of the pickup truck have been identified as 69-year-old Gary Witt and 62-year-old Cynthia Witt, both of Anchorage. Troopers say they are still working to identify the car's driver, who also died in the crash. The accident closed the park's highway at mile 87 until 9 p.m. Sunday night. It was one of two fatal crashes in the area this past weekend. 20-year-old Isaiah Harding of North Pole was killed in a three-car accident at mile 88 Saturday.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaskans band together to advance mariculture. More after this.
Grundin's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
90 Alaskans responded to the call to help shape the new Alaska Mariculture Alliance, a private nonprofit successor to a five-year task force formed in 2016 by Governor Walker. Their goal is to create a sustainable industry for growing shellfish and seaweeds to benefit Alaska's economy and communities. The founding members represent a diverse range of experienced growers to newcomers. It includes native corporations, salmon hatcheries, and community development quota groups, to name a few. A priority will be getting the Alaska legislature to pass a bill to allow for more large-scale shellfish enhancement that models the state's successful salmon hatchery programs. Julie Decker is director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation and administrator for the AMA.
There's been some effort around the state looking at king crab, goey duck, and sea cucumber, and razor clams, but they're mostly at sort of experimental level, and they're not allowed to do larger scale projects until this regulatory framework is put into play. So we're hoping that in January that'll be one of the first bills taken back up.
NOAA Fisheries has hired its first ever aquaculture coordinator for the Alaska region and a research leader, both based in Juneau. The University of Alaska at Fairbanks has hired a seaweed research specialist. The state also has added two positions to the Department of Natural Resources to reduce the backlog in reviewing new mariculture lease applications.
I think we have turned a corner there, and folks seem to recognize the word mariculture to mean something positive for Alaskans.
The AMA's ultimate goal is to facilitate a $100 million mariculture industry by 2038, and many believe that's very conservative. Find links and check out the new Alaska Mariculture map at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 36, date issued 10 a.m. on August 17th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the mainland district from noon Wednesday, August 18th until 6 p.m. Friday, August 20th. There will be a 30-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the inner Iqaluit section of the Southwest Kodiak District from noon Wednesday, August 18th until 6 p.m. Thursday, August 19th. Waters will be open to the stream terminus of Iqaluit River, stream number 256201. As previously announced, there will be a 30-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the Duck Bay section of the Afognak District from noon Tuesday, August 17th until 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 18th. And there will be a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the Northeast Kodiak District from noon Tuesday, August 17th until 6 p.m. Friday, August 20th. There will be a 69-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Tuesday, August 17th until 6 p.m. Friday, August 20th in the following areas. In the Northwest Kodiak District, the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, the Outer Iqaluit section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Sicalitic, Two-Headed, and Seven Rivers sections of the Eastside Kodiak District. Closed waters are reduced until further notice at Humpy Cove to the stream terminus of Humpy Creek, stream number 257701, and to the stream terminus of 257703 as well. The Spiridon Bay Special Harvest Area, also known as Telrod Cove, remains open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. And cost recovery fisheries have begun at Katoy Bay Special Harvest Area, and fishing opportunities in the Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, and inner and outer Katoy Bay sections will depend on the ability to meet KRAA cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District south of a latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recordophone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 17th day of August, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 6:39. It will set again at 9:46. That will give us 15 hours and 7 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 43 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 3:30 p.m. That will be a 3.3-foot tide at 3:30, followed by a high tide at 10:06 p.m. That will be an 8.8-foot tide. Our next low tide will be at 5:31 a.m. of 0.2 feet, followed by a high tide at 12:14 p.m. tomorrow of 5.9 feet. Not real big tides. Over in Larsen Bay, you have a low tide coming up at 4:28 this afternoon. That will be a 5-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:36 p.m. of 13.2 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5:59 a.m., 6 a.m., and be a 0-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 12:29 p.m., 12:30 in the afternoon tomorrow in Larsen Bay, 10.1 feet. Well, our record high for this date was 86. That was set in 2019. Our record low is 39, set in 1981. Currently 54 pleasant degrees out there under overcast skies. We're looking for just a 30% chance of rain for the rest of the day. Mostly cloudy skies with a high near 59 today. For tonight, 20% chance of rain before 2 a.m. Cloudy skies tonight with a low around 50. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies, high near 64. Northwest winds will become completely calm in the morning. And for Wednesday night, partly cloudy skies overnight, low of 49. And Thursday, mostly sunny skies Thursday too, with a high near 62. Partly sunny skies on Friday. Mariners, here is your forecast for Chiniac Bay. We're looking at a variable wind less than 10 knots today, seas to 3 feet. For Wednesday through Wednesday night, variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet in Chiniac Bay. In Marmot Bay, variable less than 10 knots, seas to 2 feet. And for tomorrow, west wind to 10 knots, seas to 2 feet. For our east side offshore, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory today. Southwest 25 right now, seas to 9 feet. For tonight, southwest 20, seas coming down to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, variable 10, seas remaining at 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 15, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, variable 10, seas to 3 feet. And for tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 3 feet. Nice weather in the Shelikof. Want to be a member of KMXT and the KODK team? Board elections are coming up, and we have some spaces open, waiting for someone just like you. To find out more, give us a call at 486-3181. You could also listen in on the next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors. That's happening the day after tomorrow, Thursday, at 6 p.m. via video conference. If you'd like to attend the meeting, just contact Jared Griffin at jared@kmxt.org. That's jared@kmxt.org. Or just give us a call here at the station at 486-3181, and we'll give you information for a link. The public is welcome to attend. Again, that's the day after tomorrow, Thursday, 6 p.m. Call us at the station for a link. The City of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough Cooperative Relations Committee will hold a meeting on Wednesday. That's happening at 4 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting's open to the public, and for meetings and agenda packets, you go to the Kodiak City of website, where you can also find a link to the meeting. And for more information, call the city clerk at 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.